Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a long-standing health, food, and environmental journalist reporting on Huffington Post, Alternet, and other outlets, as well as here with you every week on Connect the Dots. Every week on this show, we connect the dots between our health and our total health environment, everything in our neighborhood, community, society, and on planet Earth that impacts us and our health. For many years, I reported on personal health, and of course, you know, that's always an important focus to take care of oneself, one's well-being, one's mental well-being and all of that. But we're doing that not as isolated individuals, you know, kind of in our own reality, but we're also although that is a reality, we're doing it within a larger systemic context. And I think if more and more of us are aware of that, there's kind of a divide where on the one hand, we want to step up and affect the systems that affect us. And on the other hand, it can be a little intimidating. So on this show, what we try to do is bring you the information you need and also talk about, you know, how all of this affects us. I'm very excited on today's show to have someone returning to our ongoing coverage since about 2008 of fracking. I was one of the very first reporters to cover the topic, breaking the story as a news cycle reporter and covering it consistently since then. Gosh, that's been a long time. From the early days when we began reporting on fracking, I know when a lot of my regular health-interested audience was rather surprised and shocked to begin getting my regular e-zine, which I encourage everyone to sign up for at my website, healthjournalist.com. But people were at first like, whoa, well, you know, we were expecting you to be talking about healthy diet. You know, why are we talking about this? And I was like, well, this is going to affect our water supply and our food supply and therefore our health. So actually, you know, nowadays, I think people are a lot more aware about fracking. Many, many people are more aware of it. There's a lot of organizing. My own focus began in the Northeast. Things are going on nationwide. Of course, the state of Pennsylvania, which is neighboring to New York, where I reside and which I've covered a great deal, is kind of almost like the poster child for unfortunate, detrimental practice in this area. And so I'm very happy today to bring with you a great grassroots community organizer from the state of Pennsylvania to update us on some things that are going on there, and particularly in reference to our health. So this really ties together the two themes very firmly on today's show. I know we've had past programs discussing this, David Carpenter, Sandra Steingraber, a whole bunch of other people, Anthony Ingrafia, and you can check the show Connect the Dots archives to listen to some of those other programs. Today, we have some very recent, in-depth, new investigation and uncovery that's taking place in the state of America, in Pennsylvania. Excuse the slip there, and actually we'll be talking with someone who's really been leading the charge on that, and which is something I very much admire. Today's show, we're featuring a conversation with Karen Farrandon, who is the founder of Berks Gas Truth. This is a grassroots community organization in the state of Pennsylvania. People who oppose shale gas drilling and have been active on a number of fronts. A few weeks back, we spoke with Maya Van Rossum, the Delaware Riverkeeper, about Act 13. We'll talk about that more today, and I want listeners to keep that in mind. That's the act by which physicians, basically the governor of Pennsylvania and some of the legislature have introduced legislation which has been sort of in a tug of war in the courts, trying to prevent physicians who detect chemicals or fracking fluid in people's blood work, people who come in and present with symptoms. They're trying to prevent these doctors from revealing, you know, what they know to their patients and, in fact, you know, or disclosing them to public health officials. So we're going to connect another sort of loop in the public health protections that are available to people in states where fracking occurs on today's show with Karen. So heads up, and those of you who listen to the past show, you know, you'll be reminded of some of these themes. If you haven't, you can also go back to the archives and listen to the Delaware Riverkeeper show. Welcome, Karen, to Connect the Dots.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this chance to talk about what's happening here.
And you're doing, you're doing a lot. I just want to point out to our listeners, you're doing a great deal, and have done a great deal in Pennsylvania. And you're also, you're participating in Americans Against Fracking, which is now a nationwide organization that is connecting the dots between all of the grassroots groups. And tell our listeners a little bit before we dive into the main topic, because I think this will be of interest to people, of your involvement in the upcoming climate actions that are coming up early this fall.
Oh, I'm so glad you gave me a chance to talk about that, because there are a lot of things coming up around the People's Climate March on September 21st in New York City. I'm already being contacted by people who would like to stop by Pennsylvania on their way to New York. And so if there's anybody traveling, from far away and has never had a chance to see what's going on in a fracking area, please contact me at burksgastruth@gmail.com, and I will try to connect you with some of the people who are organizing tours. But then once we get to New York City, we certainly want to put fracking on the table. It's been part of the climate discussion, but not nearly as prominent a one as it needs to be, because methane is a huge issue in climate. And so we are planning on having a fracking contingent to really put fracking front and center in all of this, to demonstrate that fracking equals methane equals climate change, and it needs to be part of the discussion and not considered to be an alternative or a bridge fuel.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. In fact, I mean, we've had many presentations on this show, and I've blogged about this as well extensively. The methane leaks that inevitably happen both at drilling sites and at gas infrastructures. That means the pipelines and the compressor stations they go through, which spread out nationwide like a big web to carry all of that fracked gas to ports where it will be exported, as well as locations where it will be used, leak. They all leak, and sadly, they all leak, and they all leak methane. And although there's been, it's been said, well, that could be technically managed and doesn't need to happen, and let's not think about that, this has been going on. The current form of fracking has been going on for more than a decade, and really there is no technology that abates that, and it's a major contributor to climate change, along with carbon, and unfortunately growing. So let's backtrack in a little. First of all, can you tell us where your organization is based and who it serves, just so we get a sense of orientation as we begin to look into some of the incredible health investigation that you've been undertaking?
Sure. We're located in Kutztown, Pennsylvania. It's a community of about a couple thousand people that is really a university town, and it's in southeastern Pennsylvania, so it's not in the heart of the drilling region at all. Mm-hmm. When we started the organization, we wanted to have the backs of our friends in the rest of the state who were confronting these problems every day. I was at an event early on when a physician actually got up and said, "We are dying in our community. We need your help. We are just trying to survive this. We don't have time to fight it, too." And so that was our mission at the beginning, to inform everyone and do what we could to help our friends. But we always knew that, it's hard to be any place in Pennsylvania and not be part of it because of the infrastructure bill that you just talked about. And so we knew that one day or another something was going to be coming our way. And now our county has been the site of a number of pipeline battles, a natural gas power plant. One thing that was proposed and has successfully been fought off so far is a gas-to-liquids facility, which would convert methane or natural gas into gasoline and propane. And that would have been the first one of its kind in this country. Mm. And it was going to be built across the street from a daycare center.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it's crazy. So even though we're hundreds of miles from the nearest well pad, we're in it, and so is everybody else in this state. It's really getting harder and harder to say you're not infected one way or another by this.
Yeah, that's been when I first began reporting on this in 2008, the New York Times treated it as a neighbor issue. This neighbor wants to frack in the backyard, and make some money because, gee, we all need the economic benefit. And the neighbor next door, gosh, we're worried about the noise and we're not doing so well. And the way they treated the whole topic at the outset, which was, I was really reporting into an enormous media vacuum at the time, which thankfully is not true today. you know, it was like, well, let the two neighbors decide, you know. It's just only going to affect, you know, it's just one neighbor doesn't want it because it's in their neighborhood, you know. And of course, since then, we've talked about whole regions that are sacrifice zones. And then, of course, there's always, oh, well, that region is sacrifice zone. But meanwhile, we'll get the heating, powering fuel we need, you know, the rest of us. So we'll just kind of look away from that. But, you know, with the pipelines and all that you're describing, you don't have to be in a drilling area in order to be affected. And in fact, you know, everyone will be affected. The more this so-called bridge fuel pollutes and invades and is spread around and used around the country. So, you know, it's a sad fact. I mean, you know, even it's advertised as, you know, more green. If, you know, people are looking for a house, it's like, oh, we put in natural gas and we put in gas and it's much more green and more effective and this and that and the other. So, you know, there's a lot of confusion. Well, thank you for that orientation. You know, one of the things, too, is that where these pipelines go, and as you mentioned, you heard this doctor early on, you know, health conditions follow all of this, because at the drill sites, people are inhaling chemicals all along the pipelines. There are noxious compounds that pollute the air. And, you know, there's a whole range of health effects. We had Wilma Subra, Dr. Wilma Subra, an incredible biochemist, was on the show back in the winter, you know, in about January or February of 2014. And she basically goes around to all the contaminated regions, and, you know, there's a whole range of health impacts that people experience, and I blogged on that extensively, too. Nosebleeds, headaches, and then it goes on from there to neurological symptoms, brain tumors, you know, sadly, all kinds of skin rashes and complaints, livestock animals, mutations, dying, you know, on and on and on. So, you know, there have been these reported health impacts. Before you do a study, you know, if you try to assert, oh, well, we're seeing clinically doctors in the area anecdotally are seeing people report in different regions where this is happening with very like symptoms that they never had before. We call that information, some call it anecdotal and dismiss it. I call it clinical. That's clinical information. You can't really call information anecdotal if you haven't done a study. It's you know, anecdotal information, this anecdote, that anecdote, this person reported this, that person reported that, all of that comes, that builds to, oh, gee, we better study this, we better collect the data, we better report on this, you know, we better look into this. You know, if you follow the anecdote and collect the data and collect the information and do the study, then you really can say, well, we've looked at it and this is the science. If you haven't done that and you're not collecting the data, you're not doing the science, then the anecdotal information is all you have. And therefore, calling it anecdotal and saying, well, this is on people, it's just anecdotal, what is that telling us? You haven't done the science. So the question for the state of Pennsylvania, where there's all this activity going on and all of these health reports, you know, by doctors, we're hearing people reporting these symptoms, we're seeing this clinical picture, you know, the question is the data being collected and are we doing the studies? How do you answer that?
Well, the easy answer is no, we're not doing the science, we're not doing the studies. I think that in general, though, epidemiology is the thing that is, you know, always lagging behind when these environmental issues arise, because one person's skin rash can be somebody else's respiratory problem. You know, not everybody reacts the same way to the chemicals that are in our environment. And so I think that's always the issue, but it's only compounded when you're talking about not only introducing all of the fracking chemicals into the mix that might change from well pad to well pad, but considering that all of those chemicals are protected from disclosure by federal law, it just makes it that much more of a guessing game to really be able to trace somebody's symptom back to something that they were exposed to, because you don't know what they were exposed to. But I have to say, as bad as things are here in Pennsylvania, and they're bad, one of the articles that came out around this Department of Health investigation that occurred was that many states are doing badly. Pennsylvania claims to have a database where they log all of the complaints that they get, but they say that they've gotten 51 since, I think, 2011, and they said that none of them turned out to be related to fracking. I don't know how they ascertained any of that, but some of the states like Ohio, Oklahoma, Texas, Wyoming, and West Virginia, they don't even track complaints at all. And in Pennsylvania, where they claim that they do, their numbers are ridiculously low. There was one county in West Virginia that actually started its own online survey to try to capture the stuff the state wasn't capturing. And on their own, since this January, when they launched the form, they got 50 complaints. State of Pennsylvania is saying that since 2001 they got 51. I don't think so. In Colorado, where they do some tracking of complaints, they've, over the past 5 years, received 1,200 complaints. So I really have a hard time believing the information we're being told by our Department of Health, and I really have no understanding of how they believe they've ascertained that all of these things that they have heard about are not related to fracking.
What is happening there? They're not answering the phone?
Well, this is interesting, and this all started with a report that Katie Collinari did for State Impact Pennsylvania, where she talked about two whistleblowers who had come forward, and they were both retirees of the Department of Health, different parts of the Department of Health, both ascertaining that these things had happened where they were pretty much silenced from talking to people in the community about fracking-related health concerns. And it took two forms. One was that if you called in to the Department of Health with a complaint, if you used certain buzzwords, they were instructed verbally, they were given a list of buzzwords, and they were said, people use these words. They were verbally instructed not to engage with those people, to refer those calls or those details on to the Bureau of Epidemiology. So the caller
what were
wasn't...
What was the buzzword?
Is a list of 19. So it's words like barium, bromine, hair falling out, skin rash, environmental contaminants, Superfund site, natural gas, drilling, garbage dump, mining, fracking, frack chemicals, wastewater, well water contamination, Marcellus shale, cancer cluster, shale, waste, dump. Those are the 19 words that the staffers were told to avoid talking to people using those terms.
That is truly shocking, you know, because Superfund site is really a federal environmental term.
Yes.
So here you have, you know, which is, you know, designating, you know, an area where a mass toxic cleanup is required, and this is to regulate the purpose of, you know, the Superfund regulations is to assure that those are done, you know, safely and by a whole list of rules. So the idea that a, you know, a state-level agency would have a federal series of regulatory laws and protections as a buzzword for dismiss the person and get off the phone or something is just, it's really, it's incredible. It just, you know, I mean, not to mention all the other words, what were they supposed to do if the people said any of these buzzwords?
Well, this is what's shocking to me, because I did want to add one more detail about the list, because I actually have a copy of it in front of me, and it says, it's a brief memo, and it says, these inquiries can come directly from concerned citizens who live and work in PA, or from legislators, hospitals, doctor's offices, community partners, and Commonwealth employees. It's not just the people of Pennsylvania who are suffering these illnesses that they are dismissing, it's healthcare professionals.
Unbelievable.
No, it's just crazy. So they would say that they were having these cases referred on to the Bureau of Epidemiology for follow-up, but I can tell you from not only the reporting of the woman who was one of the whistleblowers who said she would get callbacks from angry people who had never heard back from the agency, but I can tell you from our own experience in talking to Pennsylvanians who experienced exactly all of this when they called, that they never got a callback. And so all of these complaints went into a black hole as far as the people of Pennsylvania were concerned. And I think that it was happening to a physician and who was trying to help somebody and should be able to speak one-on-one with a community health nurse at a professional level, and they're not allowed to communicate. It's just crazy to me.
It's amazing. You know, the other thing is, I am presuming, but perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about this. I mean, this must have been... If any of the people in the departments receive, you know, anybody in the Department of Public Health of the state of Pennsylvania, they're there because it's their job. It's their mandate to, you know, see to public health and to look into anything that comes to their attention. So, you know, the people who are there on the other end of the line are not, you know, for example, people who are, you know, technologists in some area, scientists, technologists, apart from, you know, the human being who are, you know, kind of just interested in manipulating technology, or, you know, then I could kind of expect, you know, a, oh, well, ho-hum, some people are calling to complain kind of thing. But these are public health staffers, you know, people who care about people, people who are interested in health, you know. That's their vocational path in life. That's their MO, you know. And so it must have felt quite strange to them to be so instructed and you know, troubling. And what I'm presuming happened is that some one or more of them came forward to share this with you, because I mean I imagine that would be very uncomfortable to receive that kind of instruction.
Yes, this all started when they spoke with the reporter from State Impact Pennsylvania, and she published her report. And the other whistleblower in her article had to he was from the Department of Epidemiology, and mm-hmm. he recalled something else that happened that had a chilling effect on the agency, and that was that one of their consultants went to a community meeting in a professional capacity representing the DOH, in other words, and mm-hmm. the conversation turned to fracking. She spoke about fracking in this meeting, answered questions and raised points, and that information got back to Harrisburg, and she was reprimanded. She wasn't fired, but she was reprimanded, and shortly thereafter, a form was issued requiring sometimes three levels of approval, all the way up to, I think it's the the deputy secretary, requiring approval to go to a community meeting, or sometimes a federal meeting or a state meeting. And sometimes one of our people we had spoken with had contacted her community health center, a county health center that's part of the Department of Health. And she had heard about a community meeting that was going to be happening on health impacts of fracking, so she went to her health center, and she invited the staff there to attend. She thought it was appropriate. And mm-hmm. they thanked her for the invitation and said they were going to have to get permission from Harrisburg. And a few weeks later, she got an email from them saying, we didn't get permission. So, you know, we've been seeing exactly what the paper, the state impact article was reporting, and the things that we've, you know, heard from the people that we've been speaking to around the state to see if they're, you know, experiences line up with what was reported.
Wow. So is there any other, you know, area of public health where it's like you need the highest level of permission to discuss it or attend a meeting about it?
Well, that was one thing that really stood out in Katie's writing, and that was that the whistleblowers who were speaking to her said they couldn't remember any other situation where this had occurred. They've never
right.
been stymied in that way, from, you know, talking to the people of Pennsylvania who, as you pointed out, they're there to protect and want to protect.
Yeah, I would think so. So this was, you know, kind of and where was this coming down from? Is there any understanding about, you know, who initiated this?
Well, at first it was outright denied that this was happening. Mm-hmm. And later on it was denied by the governor's office that he had any sort of involvement in it. So mm-hmm. it's kind of a mystery about exactly who made these determinations. But at first they denied the existence of the buzzwords list I just read to you. They mm-hmm. denied the existence of the form. And then after a subsequent article came out with links to both, it was hard for them to keep denying that. So all of a sudden they changed the story to, well, you know, we really just wanted to get into the hands of the right people, or, you know, it's commonplace to ask, you know, to ask people to let us know when they're going to go out and require, you know, permission of them to, you know, speak of one of these things. It's just you know, it's something that's a sort of a changing story every time we hear something new from the Department of Health. So it's really still unclear to us exactly where all of this came from.
Well, and, you know, I guess people had copies of this list because, I mean, you couldn't even remember all these terms. They didn't tell them, like, James Bond to sort of read the list and then, you know, burn it or something like that.
Yeah, no, this is something that came out as a memo on February 24th, 2012, I mean, an email version of it. So they obviously weren't making much of a secret of it until it came out publicly, of course. And then luckily somebody provided the reporter with the actual documents that the DOH claimed didn't exist, and she published them.
Spoken with people, in the state of Pennsylvania? You're there. Have you talked to people? And, you know, have you conversed or interviewed people who, attempted to report a problem and heard what it was like from their end?
Yes, we wanted to start investigating this ourselves in an informal way, really, because we have to rely on, you know, sort of word-of-mouth networks a lot in Pennsylvania because a lot of people don't have Internet access in the state. And so we
really?
Were interested. Yeah, I mean, there are many, many people in the rural areas who, you know, really don't touch computers,
mm-hmm.
you know. And mm-hmm. so we started putting the word out because we wanted to see if people's experiences were matching what was being reported. And mm-hmm. we talked to a little bit more than 11 people, but we got 11 stories that we then provided to the press, and we provided to the Attorney General's office with a request, with a letter signed by the people we spoke with, saying that we'd like the Attorney General's office to investigate all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we were looking for a sampling from across the state to demonstrate that this isn't something that's just a problem in one office or something.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, we also work with the DEP a lot and people who are trying to deal with that agency, and we do know that there are differences from, you know, office to office. So we wanted to see if that was the case here, and it wasn't. It was interesting to see that across the board, everybody who we spoke to got no response from the DEP, from the DOH, no matter where they were from, or regardless of when they called. I mean, we have reports back from 2008, even though this list didn't come out until 2012, but mm-hmm. as far back as 2008 to as recently as 2 weeks ago when final report we got came in, we have people who are experiencing the same thing wherever they are and from whenever they called. And so at first it seemed like maybe it was an issue of the agency not being capable of dealing with these questions, and so
mm-hmm.
they were sort of being blown off because the agency didn't even know how to deal with it. But
mm-hmm.
later on they were obviously being told not to speak with these people and not to engage and not to take down their symptoms other than to refer something onto the Bureau of Epidemiology, where it was not falling but pushed into a black hole.
Are there any extant health surveys going on or being undertaken either by the government or by anyone else in the state of Pennsylvania?
Everything that's happened here is really happening thanks to places like the Southwestern Health group that is working
mm-hmm.
with patients all the time, and they're
mm-hmm.
able to help them confirm that their illnesses or their symptoms are related to fracking, and they are keeping records, but the state has no state health registry. You referred earlier to Act 13, the sort of notorious law in this state, and part of that was based on recommendations from this group called the Marcellus Shale Advisory Commission that had been put together by the governor. It was heavily populated with people from the industry or legislators who were close to the industry, but one of their recommendations was to set up some sort of a health registry and to dedicate about $2 million to make that happen. And so when Act 13 was crafted as a bill, it was included in there, but that part of it never made it into the bill or into the law that passed. It was struck. And so they came out of the other end of that whole process of negotiating. It was a very protracted fight on the, between the Senate and the House about what version of the bill was going to make it into law, and finally when it all was said and done, the health registry was just not part of it. So there is no such thing in this state, and so there's really no way of gathering all that information and no formal process at all for doing it. Now, again, DOH would claim that they have this database, but it has 51 records in it.
Oh, that's so absurd.
I mean,
it's terrible for the community involved, and it's not a laughing matter, but that's just, it's just so dishonest. Okay, we are coming up on our half-hour break for station identification. This is a fascinating conversation that we're having here today with Karen Farrandon of Gas Burke's Truth. So stay with us, listeners. We'll be back for the second half of the show to talk more about what happens when public health departments don't look out for health. Stay with us. Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. We're here today talking with Karen Ferrandin of, feel terrible that I'm probably mispronouncing your name, Karen, of Burke's Gas Truth. We're talking about what happens when a public health agency isn't looking out for public health. And that's kind of an understatement of what's been going on in the state of Pennsylvania, where there's just been not only a failure to study the health impacts of fracking by the government, but also a failure to collect data. Only 51 reports, although all of the grassroots organizing and all the communities know, and the doctors as well know, there's many, many more than that. We've been talking, but we're also finding out, as Karen revealed in the first half of the show, that the public health agency was actually given a list of buzzwords, 19 buzzwords, and told to defer any calls that came in with anyone using any of these buzzwords rather than taking down the information or responding in any way. If you'd like to hear more about that and you missed the first half of the show, please go into the Connect Dots archives where you'll be able to hear the show later in the day. Also, like us on iTunes and pass us along to your friends if you feel they may be interested. So, you know, just to recap a little bit for new people tuning in here, Karen, the people call the public health department. The person answers the phone there. They hear the use of one of the 19 buzzwords, fracking, Superfund, waste, dump, cancer, cancer spot, whatever these buzzwords are. You read a list of 19 in the first half of the show. They hear the buzzword, and what does the person tell the member of the public who's calling in?
Well, we heard from the people we spoke with who said that they were sometimes referred to the DEP, that's our Department of Environmental Protection, which was mystifying to people, but sometimes they were told, thank you very much, we're going to refer this on, and you'll expect a call back, and then they never got the call.
And so the people said, thank you very much. Were they instructed to refer the call on, or it stopped with them?
They were instructed to refer not the caller on, but the case on to the Bureau of Epidemiology. But in reality, what happened was that meant that you were not going to get an answer from the person you were speaking to that day. You were not going to get a call back from that person. Presumably, you were going to get a call back from the Department of Epidemiology, but then you didn't. And so, in the end, you were left hanging with your symptoms, with your concerns about contaminated water. One person we spoke with had a contamination problem and was told to tell their neighbors. Yeah, tell your neighbors about the contamination. And that was kind of what they were told, and so they were really left hanging and left with their own devices. Some people, of course, would go on to their own physicians, but one of them was recently told, I'm tired of dealing with these fracking-related health complaints. So people aren't getting a lot of, help wherever they turn. And now, that's not fair. I'm sure there are plenty of doctors out there who are very, very helpful, but not everybody has one of those doctors. So when you can't go to your public health agency and not only get help, but know that your story is being recorded to help others in the state by creating this large database of information necessary to really understand the epidemiology, then, what are you supposed to do? You're really just left out hanging to dry.
Do you have, I know this is a little outside of our topic here, but, perhaps you know this, and if you don't, that's understandable too, but I just thought I'd ask, how well are the doctors who, people are going to in their local area able to deal with this? Like, in other words, do they know what they're seeing? Do they have anything to offer? How is that going down if somebody develops a symptom and goes to their doctor? What happens? Do you have any sense of that?
Well, that's one of the challenges here in Pennsylvania because of what we had mentioned earlier, Act 13 and the gag order was in Act 13. And so, because there's a trade secret disclosure, a provision for companies where they don't have to really tell anybody under any major environmental law the contents of their fracking fluids, The Act 13 that was passed here in Pennsylvania was providing an out for doctors. They had this really great plan. They said, here's what you can do. If you have a patient who's presenting with some sort of symptom and you think it's, you know, drilling related, here's what you can do. You can write a letter and you can call the company and you can submit this letter explaining why you want to know what they've been exposed to. And then you can sign a non-disclosure agreement and then we'll tell you. But that means you can't tell the patient, you can't tell your colleague who you want to refer the person to, you can't tell the family, and you can't tell your, you know, community. You can't do your job as a public health official and tell the community what's going on. And so the doctor would be the only one who would know what you know, chemicals the person may have been exposed to, either in their water or on a, you know, work site. And so that was a problem. And so one physician actually was part of the lawsuit that Maya Van Rossum surely talked to you about against Act 13, saying that this was a gag order that was unrealistic and shouldn't be part of the law. The Commonwealth Court tossed that out originally, saying that that physician didn't have standing to bring that to their court. But when the Supreme Court took it up, they remanded that part of the case back to the Commonwealth Court, saying that the physician did have standing and they need to make a decision. They stopped short of calling it unconstitutional in their recent decision, but they did kind of cut it off at its legs, saying that, no, of course somebody's allowed to tell, you know, their patient what they're being treated for. So they have not gotten away with, you know, as much secrecy as they were hoping to, but fortunately, you know, we have a little bit of information now. It remains to be seen how this will be applied, if doctors will feel comfortable, if the word will start getting out, if we'll have better information with respect to public health, you know, about some of these things that are being used. But this is all brand new, and to date, there's been so much secrecy that it's been really hard for physicians to even know what they're dealing with.
So, you know, so I just want to kind of dig into this a little bit. So if the doctor, you know, learns the information, what the chemical is, he basically knows it. He can take that information to his grave because he's not allowed to talk about it. And so what that means is you don't have a possibility of 4, 5, or 20 doctors getting together, or, you know, the health public health system getting together and saying, we know that this particular 3 ingredients, singly or in combination, because there are compound synergistic effects. You know, chemicals are studied individually, but when we mix them all together, they interact. In fact, that's why they're mixed together in fracking fluid to drill through rock and everything underground.
Right.
It's for precisely that reason. So, you know, therefore, if the doctor, you know, this doctor here signed it and he has his information, that doctor there, medicine as a whole can't learn anything.
Right.
Or compare notes, you know, or he may know, okay, it contains this, but what do my colleagues know about it? What do they know about treating that? You know, is there anything relevant here that could help my patients? All of that part of it is completely omitted. So it's actually preventing people. People are being exposed without their knowledge, and then they're being blocked from receiving health care or for any medical development that would help them in this situation. They're really being, you know, I mean, that's very damaging.
It's very damaging, and it's holding back the science in a tremendous way, as you just indicated, because it's so hard not only to understand what synergistic effects there may be with, you know, from chemical to chemical. I mean, an important part to the puzzle is how many or how much of these chemicals have been used. What quantities and in what combinations, and but then what's coming out of the earth? You know, what are these things interacting with? Because if your problem is not something that happened at the drilling site as something was going into the ground, if it's something that was a problem, something coming back out of the ground or contaminating your water, then what all is in there, and how do those things, you know, things that are in the earth, interact with the chemicals that have been introduced into the earth? There's so much that's not known.
Right, and so, and of course, you know, the claim of the industry has been, there's no science and we can't know this, but there never will be science and we'll never be able to know anything with this particular MO.
Well, if you don't want to know something, don't study it. and make it impossible for anybody to study it. I mean, that's the impression I get every day here in Pennsylvania, that, you know, things are as difficult as they are because everybody sort of understands what the truth would be if we actually have it, and that would be inconvenient for the industry. That's my own take on it, but that's, you know, certainly seems to be the way things work.
Yeah, well, that makes that makes complete sense. What is the current status of X13? Because this is something that changes a lot. So this is, again, listeners, the law that we're talking about, which, you know, prohibits doctors from sharing the information we've been discussing. So it's really, you know, there's been a real kind of dogfight about this in terms of, you know, whether it will remain and, you know, go into law and remain in effect or whether it won't. And it's, you know, with the courts weighing in on different sides, and then the governor is not giving up. He really wants this before he's, you know, perhaps voted out of office, goes on to his retirement, you know, with the gas industry or whatever. What is the current, you know, status of Act 13?
Well, the Commonwealth Court recently ruled on the constitutionality issue of this physician's gag order, and they stopped short of calling it unconstitutional, but they did limit how extensive that gag order can be applied. So that they did say, for instance, that of course you, you know, physicians should be able to talk to somebody else about it and tell a patient for sure. And so, like I said, it's so brand new that it's hard to know, first of all, that it won't be challenged in some way again, because everything is always challenged here. But it's also hard to know exactly how it might be applied. And so to see how comfortable physicians are, because I don't know that physicians, and I'm just speculating here, but I don't know that physicians won't be worried about finding themselves, you know, in their own lawsuits if they go too far. And so, you know, are they going to have a clear understanding of where they can, you know, speak comfortably and within the law, and where they might be crossing a line that they don't want to cross? And so all of that remains to be seen from my, you know, outsider point of view on this, because I'm not a physician. I don't know, you know, that community as well as I know some others, but it certainly seems like it's too new to really tell. But at least it's a good step forward that it was kind of cut off at its knees a bit, that physician's gag order. It would have been nice to see it go away entirely, which would have made all of these answers a lot easier to tell you, because it would have been clear what doctors could do. It's still not, but it's a lot better than it was.
Just tell, give our listeners your website so that people who, you know, would like to stay on top of this issue have a way of following your activities.
Sure. It's Burke's Gas Truth at, pardon me, I was giving you my email address. It's www.gastruth.org or Burke's Gas Truth, that's BERKSGASTRUTH at gmail.com if you want to reach me directly. But it's gastruth.org.
Let's just, for the last 10-12 minutes of the show, let's turn back to the issue of how fracking and fracking infrastructures, you know, fit into the overall picture of worsening climate change.
Well, something really interesting is happening right now. There's this EDF and Google partnership, that's the Environmental Defense Fund and Google partnership, where they are using Google's mapping technology to map leaks that occur in distribution lines within cities and municipalities, like they've done Boston, they've done Staten Island, they've done Indianapolis, and they're demonstrating that there are tremendous methane leaks in places where the infrastructure is crumbling, and in places where they've attended to the infrastructure, there are fewer leaks. And that all sounds great, and it actually is very interesting to look at, but the problem is that it almost suggests that we should be doing a lot, investing a lot in infrastructure upgrades. And what is really important, and we've actually started a petition to EDF and to Google asking them, we really think it's important to demonstrate that there are leaks all up and down the entire product line of natural gas. And so, you know, we've had a study that came out of southwestern Pennsylvania recently that showed tremendously high leak rates, 100 to 1,000 times EPA estimates. Mm-hmm. We've seen that around the country. That's not unique to Pennsylvania. So we're saying, look, it's interesting to look at what you're looking at, but if the message is to devote lots of money into something that stops sounding like a bridge fuel once you're doing that kind of investment, mm-hmm. why don't we instead look at the entire problem of these leaks that are occurring everywhere and say it's time to stop using natural gas. It's time mm-hmm. to get off of fossil fuels altogether. The other part of the methane issue is that, of course, it's not just what's happening as a result of fracking. There are all sorts of naturally occurring methane leaks, and one of them is really sort of an unnatural methane leak in that it's coming out of the permafrost. Because of what we're already contributing to climate change and making these, you know, places that we thought were, you know, secure for millions of years unsecure, and seeing all these areas of permafrost melt or continental shelf changes in the ocean, things that are allowing naturally occurring methane stores to be freed, you know, we're just contributing now to a greenhouse gas being introduced into the atmosphere that is over the 20-year period that we really have time to deal with all of this, 86 times more effective at heating up the climate than carbon dioxide is. And so even though we, as you know, human contributors to the problem, we use a lot more carbon dioxide, and natural gas burns as carbon dioxide and converts into carbon dioxide once it's in the atmosphere long enough. For that period of time that methane is making it there, it's so much more potent that it's a real player and a real concern, especially when, again, our human activities are allowing for the climate to be warmed enough that some of these other stores of methane are being released. We're just mm-hmm. escalating the problem ridiculously, and you don't walk that back very easily. So we really have to get off of all of these fossil fuels and not look at one of them as being sort of the methadone, you know, that helps us get off of our addiction. We have mm-hmm. to get off of all of them, and now.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're saying that, so in other words, when people heat their home, for example, with gas, and it's being burnt, then it creates carbon dioxide, so it's contributing in that way. So that's what happens at the end-use point as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. only half as clean as coal and oil in its clean-burning, you know, reputation. It's not clean, it's cleaner burning. But mm-hmm. when you look at it across its product life cycle, and again, you know, what methane itself is contributing to the climate change equation that's not related just to the burning of these home heating fuels and so forth, but when you look at the methane problem by itself and where all the places it's coming from, it's a terrifying problem. I kind of think, in the end, methane is maybe the bigger deal, even though carbon dioxide is obviously huge, but, you know, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. certainly part of it all.
So how will fractivists be able to participate in the climate events that we were talking about at the beginning of the show?
I would recommend that people start visiting the People's Climate March website and checking out some of the activities. There's a calendar of events that is building on that website as we speak. And I know that there are going to be a number of panels now within the days surrounding the event, and we're hoping to actually have one the morning of the event where people can go and learn about fracking impacts and see how it relates to climate change. And then there will be a fracking contingent in the march, which we understand will be sort of organized like the Thanksgiving Day parade, so that there will be like a fracking block. And so it will be very easy to spot us. We're going to make sure of that and to really get our seat at the table of this climate discussion. And as I mentioned at the very top of the show, people are planning on stopping by Pennsylvania because we truly are considered everybody's negative role model on fracking. And so people will see firsthand, if they want to come and visit the region, you know, what's happening here and what it looks like, and what some of our beautiful woodlands look like now. It's not just a matter of water contamination and methane leaks. It's what it's doing to our countryside and our infrastructure, you know, the bridges that are ruined now, the roads that are a mess, the constant traffic. You know, people get a real taste of it if they come here. So, you know, we hope that people will stop by, and people are welcome to contact me at the website or via the email that I provided earlier if they're interested in more information. But I definitely recommend people visit the People's Climate Change page.
How are people in the state of Pennsylvania responding? You know, back originally, it was like, this is going to be a great boon. It's going to be a tremendous economic benefit. We're so happy this is coming. And then there were these kind of naysayers. Now that it's there, that it's been there, that people really are experiencing the full impact of what it means, You know, are there people who were all for it who are, you know, now regretting that? You know, what do you see in terms of, you know, how Pennsylvanians who are having to live with and experience this, you know, what they have to say about it? I remember having this conversation, a very similar conversation to the one we're having today, you know, but earlier in the game, back with Bridget Shields, maybe 2 or 3 years ago on this show. You know, so I'm really curious to hear, since you're there, what it's looking like for people today.
I think it's been one of the most interesting parts of all of this, being involved with this, to see, first of all, who all I end up working with. You know, there are people across ideological lines, some people who were sort of naturally inclined to believe everything and say, drill, baby, drill, and who now are experiencing firsthand what it's like when something goes wrong, and now are calling themselves chill, baby, chill advocates. And so it's I've seen that a lot, where people signed the lease or didn't think that it was that worrisome and didn't mind being near fracking, who are now extremely concerned. And that's, it's really heartbreaking, you know, when you see that somebody really thought that they had some sort of, you know, easy way of offsetting some of the losses for their family farm or something. You know, people who thought it was a real economic advantage to be able to get this extra income and now can't farm anymore. I mean, you know, it's just, it's terrifying to think that people are walking into this kind of blind and not getting a lot of great information before they sign their leases. And it's truly sad to see what happens on the back end of that. But it is happening more and more that people are either aware of it, who weren't aware of it at all before, or, again, are directly impacted and now are really regretting the decisions that they made.
Yeah, that is that's something. That's really that really is incredible. So do people like call up your organization, and you know, when they're beginning to kind of worry about this, or you know, how does that work?
Sometimes they do. We have a pretty strong network of grassroots folks and NGOs in the state who are good at, you know, referring things to the right place because there are people studying one part of it or have access to people who can help. Like with these health issues, there are a number of public health physicians who on their own are, you know, doing some work and trying to help people. So I know when I get that call that I can refer somebody to the right person who will be able to screen them and really understand their problem and direct them to the right place or do some diagnostics of their own, do some testing. I mean, one of the women that we spoke to about her experiences calling DOH got so little information, really no information from them, that she started searching on her own on the internet and ended up finding Calvin Tillman, who has been in the gas landfills and is the mayor of Dish, Texas. She found his website, contacted him because their problem was similar. They were both living with compressor station problems, and he told her what tests to go get. So fortunately, you know, that there are some physicians that we know now in Pennsylvania, we're better organized ourselves because we have to be. So when people call us, we can say, no, here's the person you should talk to, here's the physician we can refer you to, or here's the person who's working on, you know, that water contamination issue or this air quality issue. And so we try to do that. So we try to function in that way as a network. But we had a situation in our own county where a compressor station blew down and nobody really addressed it until the neighbors called me and I went to the Department of Environmental Protection and asked them why they weren't investigating it. And when they finally did, it turns out that 61 tons of VOCs and 174 million cubic feet of natural gas were dumped into the air in a matter of 20 minutes.
Yeah. Wow. And can you just explain to our listeners what a blowdown event is, in case they don't know?
Yes.
And briefly, because we're coming to the end of the show.
Compressors fill long pipelines every 40 to 100 miles, and they compress the gas using turbines. Sometimes there will be a valve malfunction or something that causes the thing basically to erupt. And so that's what a blowdown is. All this stuff is just released that should not be released. And so during Hurricane Sandy, we had that experience I was just describing. And again, people who were clueless, I mean, there were neighbors who were not being told anything. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it really takes networks like ours to help people like that.
Well, I want to just mention that, you know, you can support Gasberg's Truth, listeners. There is a donation button on their website, as well as track them for more information. You know, and It's really important information. It's important for both the people in Pennsylvania, and it's important nationwide for all people in all locations who want to, you know, solve this problem and really take a strong move to renewables. Thank you so much, Karen Faradin, for being with me today on Connect the Dots. We've been Facebook friends for a while. It's just a pleasure kind of meeting and talking to you.
And you got my name right, I wanted to tell you.
Okay, good. All right, good. I'm glad. And thank you for all the work you're doing. It's just fantastic. Thank you, listeners, for being with us today on the show. We'll be back next week, Wednesday, 10 a.m. Eastern, every week for our next edition of Connect the Dots. You know, really think about participating in the climate activities that Karen has been talking about. If you're in the New York area region on September 21st, you can participate for climate change, for fractivism, all of the above, and learn more as well. Thank you again, and we'll be back with you next week for another edition of Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy.